TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Ralph Nader, How to End the War on Iraq. In early 2005, Ralph Nader began a 10-city tour to stop the war and end the occupation of Iraq. Undaunted by the outcome of the 2004 election, he presents a passionate critique, not just of Bush, but of the Democratic Party, and launches a grassroots movement of 1 million committed activists that demands a complete pullout of troops and corporations from Iraq within a 6-month time period. Here is Ralph Nader, recorded in Seattle in January of 2005.
After the election, the Democrats did not look at themselves in the mirror, with few exceptions. They still said, well, we came close, for heaven's sake, 70,000 swing votes in Ohio, and they'd be talking about the failed Karl Rove. So because they came close instead of landsliding Bush, which is really what they should have done, not just beat him. He has such a horrible record. They should have landslided him and taken the Congress. Because of that, they're making excuses for themselves that warrant no fundamental change in what they're doing and no replacement of the people who failed. Except for Howard Dean, there is no insurgent movement to replace the Democrats who have been losing for 10 years to the worst of the Republicans at the local, state, and national level. I mean, they would get better advice from a football coach. And that's when you know that it's going to happen again. And it's going to happen again. And because the Democrats have this practice of abandoning whole states from presidential elections, they lower the vote for the Democrats in states like Georgia and Alabama, all the way down to city council. You travel in the South, the Democrats are very bitter, what's left of them. Because year after year, there's no campaign at the national level, and of course, the Democrats lose governorships, legislatures, and mayors. So what you can reasonably predict in the future is more of the same, more losing ground in Congress. How can you abandon the red states and expect to win 6 Senate seats in the South that were once Democratic until this month? How can you keep Kerry and Edwards and all the machine politics and all the ads out of Georgia and South Carolina and North Carolina and expect to win the seat that Edwards had to vacate or the seat that Hollings had to vacate? They lost them all. Now, why is this important for people of our persuasion? Because what it tells us is, one, that the Democratic Party is incapable of internal reform. It took me 20 years to realize this, so take your time. After every defeat, the same people are in charge. So where does that leave us? All right. 1 million Americans distributed throughout the United States, giving 200 hours volunteer time a year, raising or contributing $100 a year, focusing with laser beam intensity on Congress with 4 or 5 high-profile issues like living wage, the war, so on. You cannot believe the change that will occur. Why? Because from members of Congress' point of view, with their safe seats, there's nothing out there. They don't lose a day's sleep about any rumble from their district. Nixon was so afraid of the rumble of the people in the late 60s and early 70s, that he went berserk signing progressive legislation. He signed the Environmental Protection Act, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, the Product Safety Commission Act. He sent a health insurance bill to Congress that was better than Clinton's. He wanted to give voting rights to the people of the District of Columbia. He sent a bill to Congress for rehabilitation of nonviolent drug offenders instead of incarceration. Now, you think he believed in all this? He heard the rumble of the people. Nixon was terrified of liberals. Bush is contemptuous of liberals. He sneers at liberals. Now, who do you think bears that responsibility? The liberals. Because what they did was, they allowed their party to be dragged into the grip of the corporate interests and allowed their party to remove from the political electoral table the basic fundamental issues of livelihood that won again and again for the Democrats under FDR and Truman. And when you create a vacuum because you take off the table the corporate exploitation that goes right down to people's housing, to people's nutrition, to people's public works services, to people's safety, to people's environment. When you take that off the table, when you take off the table a living wage, when you take off the table all these issues that are perceived to be important by the people, not some think tanks, in rushes the social religious issues. Desecration of the flag, prayer in schools, abortion, gay rights. Are they unimportant? Of course not. But they're not all important. And the Democrats allowed them, allowed the Republicans to make them all important with their vicious distortion and bigotry. That's the problem. We have the militarization of our society, right from here all the way to Iraq and around the world. We have corporate globalization undermining our democratic processes, as the people in the streets in Seattle demonstrated in 1999. We have a declining standard of living for millions of American workers. A majority of them make less today than 1973 in inflation-adjusted wages. We have devastation of our environment, of our land, our water, our air, poisoned by these corporations. That's the word for it. Despoiled, made uninhabitable, and poisoned. And what do? Congress is made up of 535 people, men and women, who did exactly what you did this morning. They ate some breakfast, and they decided what they were going to do. 1,500 corporations control the majority of those people. And we're 200 million Americans. Consider that. Can't 3 million Americans organized in Congress Watch locals, or even a million of them, in congressional districts take over Congress? If they represent values, policies, and programs and perceived needs and necessities of tens of millions of other people, like on health care? Of course they can. But first, they've got to realize that there's a quantitative goal to be met, and everyone has to play their part. That's why these clipboards are being circulated. 1 million Americans, 200 volunteer hours a year, that's 4 hours a week, a couple reality shows, and $100 each, $100 million. How many of you think that's a worthwhile effort? It's also a life-fulfilling effort. There's no greater gratification than justice. You know that. There's no gratification greater than working with your fellow neighbors, workers, relatives, to make a better society. When you prevail on something, you resurrect, you renovate, you initiate something. It's tremendous. We have to realize that a society whose population spends the bulk of their waking hours looking at screens is a society that is going to be dominated by screens. TV screens, video screens, computer screens. Interpersonal activity is now at an all-time low in the civic community. It is harder than ever to get people out to rallies, marches, city council. You have to beg them. You've had that experience? You beg people to save themselves. In many ways, we have to think anew in this kind of milieu, because the last civic innovation was when? Does anybody remember it? Is anybody here 100 years old? Do you know the abolition movement for slavery in England pioneered most of the civic initiatives, strategies that we're still clinging to today? Contacting their parliaments, demonstrating, petitioning. It's time to take it to another level, isn't it? Especially with the internet. Isn't it time to take it to another level in terms of everybody saying to themselves, I'm going to have a breakthrough innovation in civic action. I'm going to find a way that's going to push this forward, that's going to motivate people, that's going to develop strategic priorities, that's going to stop the people who do all the talking and don't do any work from monopolizing citizen and community neighborhood meetings. The people who do the work should run the organization, not the people who do the talk. How many of those have you gone through? Talk, 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 and you give them an assignment and they don't have the time. Now here we come with Iraq. It seems like an impossible task. We have a renegade messianic militarist in the White House. A man who has never admitted a mistake other than an occasional wrong appointment, unnamed. That's as far as he's gotten. Oh, and he uses words that Laura chides him about, like smoke him out. A president who never admits to making a mistake is a president who is the biggest mistake of all. We have a Bush administration that will not level with the American people on the full range of U.S. casualties because it doesn't want an increased opposition to this illegal, fabricated war. This war is a war crime. It is a war crime It is a war crime from the legal standard. One, it was not constitutionally authorized. Only Congress can declare war. That is not a technicality in our Constitution. That is a requirement. It was considered by the Founding Fathers one of the most important requirements. They did not want one person in the White House to send our nation to war. Unconstitutional, one. Second, it violated international law and treaties to which we are signatory, including the UN Charter. You do not attack a nation that poses no threat to you. The war was based on a platform of fabrications, deceptions, lies, and fulminations from the White House, day after day on television, as we recall. There are no weapons of mass destruction. Bush spent $1 billion of your tax dollars after the invasion, desperately seeking some container, some canister, some mobile vehicle with some residue of the biological and chemical materials that Reagan and Bush 1 sold to Saddam Hussein in the 1980s. So it's illegal, an illegal, unconstitutional war. Now, when a war is a war crime, every death and every injury in that war is a war crime. And he has now implicated thousands of Americans in his war criminal activity. We have to get out of that war. This is the first war we've been plunged into against the considered judgment of retired military, diplomatic, and intelligence officials. And not a few in the government itself. The war was opposed by the U.S. Army in the Pentagon up to the four-star level, just below Myers, General Myers, because they knew what they were getting into. You cannot defeat a popularly supported insurgency whose principal appeal is to get the occupier out of their country. Cannot be defeated. If we want to distance the mainstream Iraqis from participating and supporting the insurgency, shopkeeper by day, guerrilla by night, the only way to do that is with a dead set timetable to pull out our U.S. military and corporate oil company forces from Iraq within a six-month period. Why six-month period, other than they couldn't get out logistically in that period? Because we owe a responsibility to the Iraqi people, and it goes back a long way. We helped entrench Saddam Hussein. He was an anti-communist dictator. That was our favorite dictator all over the world, right? He was so taken by our support, he thought he could take over Kuwait. And, of course, then he became our enemy. Pushing him back out of Kuwait, the UN-US sanctions killed 500,000 children, rough, give or take, according to the Distinguished Physicians Task Force from this country that went to Iraq repeatedly. It was up to us not to violate international law, which requires any embargo not to inflict deadly harm on innocent civilians in the country that's the subject of the embargo. And then, of course, in 1998, the bombing increased. There was a mini attack on Iraq. And that's when Clinton and Gore passed through Congress a resolution saying it was American foreign policy to move to regime change in Iraq, a point that Bush pointed out repeatedly as he moved to regime change in Iraq. So we owe them a responsibility. And that's why we can't just zing out of there. With an end game timetable, the 6 or so months, we will be able to bring in peacekeepers from Islamic countries nearby and neutral countries that are used to that kind of international effort because they know it's a short-term thing, and they are not supporting a permanent U.S. occupation with 14 military bases a building and a permanent takeover of their oil resources by Texas oil companies and continue humanitarian aid. All of this will cost a lot less on every index, casualties, dollars, international reputation, or becoming a recruiting ground for more terrorists. How do we achieve something like this? All over the country, there's going to be an increased acceleration demanding a withdrawal policy from Iraq. An end to the war and occupation is another way to put it. After taking a year off, a lot of these groups are swinging back into action. But it's going to take more than demonstrations, however impressive they are. And there will be demonstrations. It's going to take tens of thousands of veterans and retired military intelligence and diplomatic people who are already against this, who already warned against this, but who haven't integrated their mobilization and focused it on the ultimate decision makers, George W. Bush and the Congress. Veterans for Peace, veteransforpeace.org. It's out of St. Louis. I spoke to their convention in Boston last year. These are World War II, Korean, Vietnam, Gulf War, and Iraq War veterans. For the swing opinion in this country, military, intelligence, diplomatic, and veterans are the credible group, as they're mobilizing themselves. Human Rights Watch got 10 major retired generals and admirals to sign a letter to the Congress opposing Gonzalez's nomination because his civilian lawyers in the Justice Department overrode military law and international law in the Geneva Conventions. And it's really show you how bad things are in this country. Is it was the military lawyers that stood tall against the corruption of the civilian lawyers in the Justice Department and the White House. So what do we come down to? Let me know what we come down to. There's a real analytic tool here if you want to motivate people. It's called the sensuality ladder. The sensuality ladder is where you get closer and closer to people's senses and sense of right and wrong. So you can talk about nutrition on a general basis, but if you talk about dirty meat with rat feces in the hot dogs, there's a different reaction, right? That's going down the sensuality ladder. You can talk about the billions of dollars wasted in the Pentagon budget, but when you talk about a $435 claw hammer that you can get for 12 bucks in the hardware store, that really hits home. So what we have to ask ourselves is, what gets your friends and neighbors angry about injustice? At what level do they finally become angry? Socially indignant, to put a phrase on it. That leads to action. You notice they mobilized against desegregation in places around the country, you know? Busing, or their kids. So what we have to do is bring these issues that people in a general way feel uncomfortable about happening in our country and bring it down to the sensuality ladder. And in that sense, we have to ask people the following question. If you don't want power, we're not interested in you. If you don't want to be a leader, we're not interested in you. If you don't want to dedicate some of your resources to expanding this great movement of democracy as if people mattered first, not corporations, we're not interested in you. We have to become stringent with one another at a level that is a fraction of what we do on the sports teams. Huh? Do we allow any slackers on our team? You know how people talk to one another? Right down to the bowling league. That doesn't mean we have to be nasty. It means we have to convey the difference between overall concern for injustice and being really serious about it. Now, we are trying to wind down this campaign not by sitting in Washington and backdoor fundraising with fat cats or cutting deals on tort issues or whatever, but by going around the country and getting these contributions from people who are serious and getting a mobilization to get out of that quagmire war in Iraq. And at the same time, bringing together the names, addresses, email lists of more and more people who are serious, who want to reach that critical mass of 1 million, to demonstrate that it doesn't take dropping out of your entire life's routine and throwing everything you have on the struggle for justice. If we do it in a very smart, strategic way, and we put the pressure on the key Khyber Pass, which is Congress, and we do it in a way where we can be continually gratified and encouraged to continue expanding our efforts. Now, in a way, we're trying to make history, aren't we? In a way, we're trying to at least achieve the breakthroughs our forebears achieved, signal junctures of American history. The abolition of slavery, women's right to vote, the struggle for labor, the struggle for farmers, all the way into this century and all the struggles you know about. Just think of the formidable odds there. In 1 year, the whole picture about Iraq can be changed. This is the most powerful army in the history of the world, Army, Air Force, Navy. The firepower against those insurgents is 1,000 to 1 or 10,000 to 1. Today's Seattle Times has the following stunning headline, U.S. losing ground war in Iraq. That tells you that if anyone tried to do to us, anyone tried to occupy us with 10,000 times firepower from some foreign power who liked our resources, who would you bet on? Yeah, I think even Texans alone would take care of them. Why? Because they are fighting for everything that they care about, whether we agree with them or not. And they know that we're fighting there because of a war criminal in the White House called George W. Bush.
That was a half-hour excerpt of a one-hour speech by Ralph Nader, recorded by Martha Baskin in Seattle in January of 2005. You can find out more about the work of Ralph Nader by checking his website at www.votenader.org or on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour talk by Ralph Nader by calling us. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your tape or CD order is the only support we receive and helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape or CD by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.